Today we have the privilege of studying Yeshayahu Perek Mem, chapter 40. This is the first of a long series of 26 prakim, which form the end of Sefer Yeshayahu, all of which deal with Nevuot Nechama, all of which are consist of prophecies of consolation. They try to encourage the Jewish people, they give news of a glorious return to Eretz Yisrael, and suggest that the future will be even more promising. The goal of these chapters is to address specifically the Jews who live at the time of the building of the second Beit HaMikdash, the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. These Jews have, as we read from the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, have returned to Eretz Israel following the hope and the expectation of a rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, of a new age that will dawn upon the Jewish people. But their hopes are in many ways disappointed. Once they arrive in Eretz Israel, they find that the society in which they live in Eretz Israel is not one that is conducive to this glorious return. The people of Eretz Israel who have not been exiled are cut off from the rest of the Jewish people. Some of them are Jews who see themselves as the owners of the land. Others are Samaritans, Arabs, Philistines, etc., who have their own ethnic identities. The economic situation is terrible. The main city in Eretz Israel at the time is Shechem. There is very little economic life in Yerushalayim. And the Persian Empire, which launched this process of restoration, is not terribly supportive of its continuation. The political background here is very important. The process of return to Eretz Israel began approximately 538 BCE. It began after the Empire of Babylonia was conquered by the Persian Empire. The Persian Empire at the time is led by a king named Cyrus, or Koresh in Hebrew, who is a political liberalizer and tries to lessen the amount of control that the empire, the central empire, has over all the sections of the empire. And as part of this, he sees himself as a restorer of ancient temples, especially the restorer of the temples of historic Babylonia. He tries to make himself almost more Babylonian than the Babylonians by restoring the Babylonian temples. And he also is aware that the Jews are an ancient religion and says, well, let the Jews also restore their ancient temple. And he issues a proclamation saying, anyone who wants to restore the Jewish temple, let them go. This is seen by the Jews as an opportunity to return. And many Jews do, although the numbers are fairly limited. Several thousand Jews return, most Jews remain in Babylonia. The Jews who return soon find themselves very depressed. They've returned to Eretz Israel, but the country is economically in disastrous condition. Have they done the right thing? And it is these are the issues which Yeshayahu addresses in chapters 40 to 66, especially in chapters 40 to 48. The largest issue Yeshayahu needs to confront and address is the disappointment of the people, the despair, the sense that God has somehow abandoned us. We were promised this return, and this return is now disappointing us. And so in those words he begins, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, Yomar Elokeichem. The question of what Nachamu, Nachamu literally means comfort, comfort my people, says God. The question here is who are the people supposed to comfort, or who is supposed to comfort the people? Nachamu usually has a direct object. Comfort whom? And so the Targum offers one interpretation. Nevi'aya itnabu tanchumin alami. Prophets offer consolation to my people. Another interpretation, which was proposed by my student Michael Greenberg, which I think is a very interesting possibility, is that it is the people themselves who are supposed to do the act of comforting, and it is the people who are supposed to comfort Yerushalayim. Nachamu, nachamu, amim. You, my people, comfort. Whom should you comfort? You should comfort Yerushalayim. And we see this in the next pasuk. Daberu alev Yerushalayim, vikiru eleha. Speak to the heart of Yerushalayim, and listen to it. Speak to the heart of Yerushalayim and call out to it. To speak to the heart of is used elsewhere in Tanakh as a sort of enticing or seductive language, a language of speaking to someone in such a way that they will really listen closely and will be moved to emotionally by the words that are spoken. So speak to Yerushalayim and speak to its heart. Call out to Yerushalayim. And what are they supposed to say to Yerushalayim? Ki mal'a tzeva'a ki nirtza avona. Ki lakcha miyad Hashem kiflaim b'chol chatoteha. That its tzava has been completed. What does tzava here mean? Not its army, but its term of service. Yerushalayim's term of service is completed. Its sin has been expiated. It has taken from God twice of the worth of all its sins. In other words, Yerushalayim has done its service. It's done its time. The time for redemption is now. This idea that emphasizing that the time for redemption is now is a critical one, because the people are not entirely convinced that this return to Eretz Israel fomented by the declaration of Cyrus is in fact the Geula that they have been promised and waiting for. Perhaps this is a false Geula. Perhaps this is not God's redemption. Perhaps we're still in Galut. And after all, the Geula looks very much like Chorban. Yeshayahu says no. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. It is up to you to comfort Yerushalayim. Speak to Yerushalayim. Tell Yerushalayim that its time of servitude is now over. The punishment is over. Redemption is about to begin. That is the first major idea which Yeshayahu presents in these chapters. The second idea, which relates to the first tangentially, as we will see, is the idea of a road to God. This is the idea that is presented in Psukim 3 through 5, Gimel through Hey. Ko kore, a voice calls out. And what does the voice say? Bamidbar panu derech Hashem. In the wilderness, make clear a road towards God. Yashiru ba'arava misila lelokenu. Make straight in the plain a highway to our God or for our God. There's a deliberate ambiguity in these verses. Is this a road for God, for God to walk on, or is this a road towards God? And we'll see in a moment that ambiguity is central. Kol ge yinase v'chol har v'giva yishpalu v'haya he'akov l'mishor v'harechasim l'vik'a. All the valleys will be lifted up, all mountains and hills will be brought low, that which is crooked will become straight, and the slopes will become a flat area. V'nigla kvod Hashem, God's glory will become revealed. V'ra'ucho basar yachdav ki pi Hashem diber. All flesh together will see that God's mouth has spoken. This is referring to the process of return. On the one hand, the people who are returning do not feel in any way glorious or fulfilled. On the other hand, there is this promise here that on the one hand they are going towards God, on the other hand it is a road for God. How does that exactly work and what is the significance of that remains at this point enigmatic, and I will leave these psukim as an enigmatic question and only interpret them after we study psukim tet and yud. When we get to the tenth pasuk, we will then understand what these psukim 3 to 5 mean. And I move on now to the next unit. This next unit, psukim 6 to 8, deal with the issue of ephemeral or temporary versus lasting. What is ephemeral? What is lasting? Human actions are ephemeral. God's actions are lasting. This is a critical point in understanding this parak. Psukim vav through chet, 6 to 8. Kol omer kra. A voice calls out and says, call out. Ve'amar maya kra. Then I respond by saying, what shall I call out? Kol habasar chatzir v'chol chasdo kitzitz hasadeh. All flesh is like straw. All of its deeds of kindness are like flowers in the field. Yavesh chatzir navel tzitz. Straw dries out, the flower dies out. Ki ruach Hashem nashva bo. Because the Spirit of God blows at it, the wind blows at it, and this is the idea of the Spirit, the wind is spoken of as divine, in order to contrast the lasting and powerful nature of God with the ephemeral and temporary nature of man. Achen chatzir ha'am, indeed, human beings' actions are straw. Yavesh chatzir navel tzitz, the straw dries out, the flowers die out, but udvar elokeinu yakum le'olam, but the word of our God lasts forever. The idea here is that on the one hand, the straw dies and dries. On the other hand, God's actions last forever. Human beings' actions are ephemeral. God's actions are permanent. That is the central message of these psukim, and that is important in understanding the nature of the return. If it is a human action, the return is a human action, fomented by Cyrus, then, like all human actions, is likely to die out. The imperial policy will change at a certain point, the Persian Empire will be interested in other areas of the globe, and Cyrus's promise to the Jews will become one in a very long series of broken promises by emperors. On the other hand, if this is a divine promise, it is lasting, it is permanent. There is a reason to connect oneself to this, because by connecting oneself to this return, one is connecting oneself to eternity. That is the basic nature of the issue addressed by these psukim, where they try to emphasize that God's actions last forever. The larger question in this parak is this return a human action or a divine action? And that issue is now taken up in psukim 9-10. Al har gavoha ali lach mevaseret Zion. Harimi vakoach kolech mevaseret Yerushalayim. Harimi, al tirai, imiri le'arei Yehuda, hinei elokeichem. On a high mountain, go up, O you who announcer to Zion. Lift up your voice strongly, you who announces to Yerushalayim. Lift up your voice, do not be scared. Say to the cities of Yehuda, behold, your God is coming. And this is an announcement to the cities of Yehuda from Yerushalayim that God is arriving. The next two psukim deal with that issue of God arriving. The imagery here is very significant and important. Psukim Yud Yud Aleph, the issue of God arriving, and then we'll go back to look at psukim 3-5. Hine Hashem Elokim bechazak yavo. Behold, God comes powerfully. Uzro'o moshlalo, with his ruling arm, his ruling powerful arm. Hine sicharo ito ufi'ulato lefanav. Behold, his wages are before him, his reward is in front of him. Now, this image of God returning with his wages and reward in front of him evokes the image of a returning conquering hero who comes back with his booty and capture from his battles. Part of the booty and that which he has captured are slaves or prisoners, and the slaves or prisoners would typically be driven before the conquering hero and not in front, not in back of him, but before him. They would so that he can control them. And here you have this image of God coming back from battle, God as a warrior here, who comes back and his wages or his captives are before him. Now, who is it who is actually coming back towards the cities of Yehuda? If one lived at the time and one looked out into the fields, one might not see God returning. One would see the people of Israel returning from Galut Bavel. The image here is very important, because who is it who is coming back? It is the people of Israel coming back, but who is behind the people of Israel? The people of Israel here are the nimshal, are those who are represented by the spoils and booty of the warrior, who is driving his captives in front of him. Behind the people of Israel comes God. In other words, together with this return is God. It's not just the people of Israel who are coming back, but it is God also who is coming back. That is the key point here. They are part of a divine return. God is part of this process of restoration of the return to Zion. This point is emphasized even more strongly in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ki ro'eh edro yir'eh, like a shepherd shepherds his flock. Bizro'o yekabetz tla'im, in his arm he gathers the young goats or sheep. Uvecheko yisa, and in his chest he holds them. Alot yinahel, he leads the tired ones kindly. So the idea of God as a kind shepherd. Now, the image of shepherd here is also significant, particularly the image of shepherding goats. One can lead sheep, one cannot lead goats. In order to shepherd goats, one has to go behind the goats. The head goat goes in front, and the shepherd goes in the back of the goats. You can actually try this. I actually have watched people try this. You cannot actually lead goats. You have to walk behind the goats. And that corresponds to the image in Pasuk Yud of God going behind the people. God is as coming behind and the people coming in front. Here the goats are representative of the people, and God the shepherd comes in back of them. And so we have here two images. Pasuk Yud, the image of power and of strength. Pasuk Yud Aleph, the image of mercy. Two aspects of God, strength and mercy. But in both images, God is driving the people before him. God is returning, but the people are in the vanguard. The people come first. Now we go back to Psukim Gimel Tehein. We understand more closely who is this road for. It is a road that has to be straight and a road that has to be level. Why? Can God not walk without a superhighway that is level? God has delicate feet? Of course not. The point is that the people need a really good road so that they will have an easy journey back to Eretz Israel. But why then is this road being leveled and why is this road then being called a road for God, a road to God? Because the people are not returning alone. The people are part of a process of divine restoration. It is God who is causing this return. It is God who is returning to Eretz Israel together with the people, metaphorically. It is God who is motivating this return, and those who are returning are part of a divine process. That is the key to the first 11 psukim of this chapter. And so if we go back and review the first 11 psukim, we see, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, console Yerushalayim, because its time for its redemption has now come up. Then psukim 3 to 5, the road, prepare the road. The road must be a good and straight road for the people, but it is also a road for God. And it is a road on which God is participating in the people's return. And when God's glory is apparent, everyone will know that this is God's glory. When will God's glory be apparent? When all the people have returned. So God is coming at the end of this process. Then Psukim 6 to 8 are the contrast between divine actions and human actions. Because this is a divine action, it is lasting. It is not a human action, which can be ephemeral. It is a divine action. God was part of this return. This return will not wither. The Jews will not fail. The Jews will not fail in their attempt to establish a society in Eretz Israel. And then Psukim 9 to 11 announced to the cities of Judah that God is arriving. But wait, God is not arriving. It's the people who are arriving. Ah, but the people are part of a divine process. The people are going in front. God is coming behind. Psukim 10 and 11 illustrate this idea with the imagery of a shepherd, first of a warrior, second the imagery of a shepherd. God is driving the people before him. These are the key ideas in the parak, which are illustrated in the first 11 psukim. I will go on with the next several psukim in this chapter, but I will not be able to do them in great detail. Psukim 12 through 15 are a exaltation of God and a contrast between God and other false gods of the nations. Because it is important to realize that the claim that this is a divine process is not something that only the Jews are dealing with. At the time of the Hatzarat Koresh, time of Cyrus' declaration, Cyrus also claims that he is sent by God. Of course, he claims that he is sent by the chief god of Babylon, the god Marduk. And so he evokes the whole issue of the Babylonian pantheon. And here Yeshayahu launches an implicit attack on Babylonian theology. He asks as follows, Mi madad b'sha'alo ma'im v'shamayim bazeret tiken? Who is it who measured water in his palm and established the sky with his little finger? V'chal b'shalish afar ha'aretz, and can measure in his three middle fingers the dust of the earth. V'shakal b'peles harim u'gva'ot b'moznaim. Who is it who can weigh in a balance the mountains and the hills in a scale? Mi tiken et ruach, who established the wind? Hashem. It is God who established all these things. And here we find the God is the creator. Now here we find a shtoch at Babylonian theology. He asks, "V'ish atzato yodienu." Let us tell him. Let us announce who is the man who counseled him. Who was his man of counsel? Tell us who was his man of counsel. Now I think that this idea of "v'ish atzato yodienu," and I'm reading it here against the Ta'amim because I do think it's an attack on Babylonian theology, is an attack on the idea prevalent in Babylonia that at the time of creation the creator God takes counsel with his advisor Mumu. And so Yeshayahu was saying, did God take any counsel? In other words, God is the supreme God of Israel. Our God is the supreme creator, the only creator, the creator who doesn't need anyone to give him advice. And we see this idea in the next pasuk. Et mino atzvayivinehu, with whom did he take counsel to give him to get wisdom from? Vayilamdehu be'orach mishpat, someone had to teach him the ways of justice. Vayilamdehu da'at, the derech tivunot yodienu, did someone have to teach him wisdom or the ways of knowledge? God is the only one. God is the only creator. God is the one who directs processes in the world. This too is an attack on Cyrus' theology. Cyrus believes he is sent by Marduk. Marduk is not the creator God. Marduk is a later God. And here Yeshayahu is saying, our God, whom we believe created this return, is one who is the creator of the world and who knows all the processes that are going to happen in the world. Hen goyim kemar midli, uchashachak moznaim nechshavu, heniyim kadak yitol. For God, nations are like little drops of water in the bucket. Mar midli here, Rashi understands mar as the bitter drops that are left at the bottom of the bucket, the drops that are adhered to the walls of the bucket and become fetid and putrid. So the nations are like the little drops in the bucket. Uchashachak moznaim nechshavu, they're like the dust on the scales. In other words, they don't really tip the balance in any way. Hein iyim kadak yitol, he picks up nations like dust. The idea here is not to denigrate the nations. The idea is that God is so infinitely superior to nations that he controls all the processes of the world, and that he is not the God whose power is limited to a specific nation. He is not the God of Babylonia, or the God only of Israel, or the God only of another nation. He is the God of the entire world, and he can control processes that involve both Babylonia, Persia, and Israel. Ulvanon, Pasuk Tetzayin, Ulvanon en de ba'er, v'chayato en de ola. There are not enough trees in Lebanon to make appropriate burning for God. Even all the animals in Lebanon would not be sufficient to make a sacrifice to God. The idea that all the nations and all the animals in the world are pale in comparison to God. God is so infinitely transcendent and superior that he can control all of these things. And this idea again in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Kol hagoyim ka'ayin negdo, me'efes vatohu nechshavu lo. All nations are like nothing next to him. They are considered like nothingness and emptiness when compared to him. Ve'el mi tidamyun el, umadmut ta'archu lo. Because God is so superior and so transcendent, it is impossible to make an image of him. And the next two psukim, pasuk yutet and kaf, deal with this idea of laughing at idolaters in the process of idol making. God is so very much superior. You, Babylonians, think that you have to make very nice statues for your God. And in fact, Babylonian theology at the time is very much connected to the question of the beautification and glorification of the temples and statues of Marduk in the city of Babylon. Yeshayahu was laughing at them and saying, you are so concerned about your statues, don't you know that God, the controller of the world, doesn't have any statues? Psukim Yud Tet Kaf, HaPesel Nasach Charash, V'Tzoref Bazahav Yirakeenu, Urtukot Kesef Tzoref. The statue is poured by a smith, the beating out smith beats out the gold sheets, Urtukot Kesef Tzoref, and then he covers it with silver. Hamisukan truma, etz lo yirkav yivchar. This is a difficult phrase. Hamisukan truma. The word misukan here can be connected to a particular type of tree known in Babylonia, used for idol making, the mushekenu tree. So one takes a mushekenu tree, which one designates as a donation for the god. Chooses a tree which will not rot. Charash chacham yivakesh lo laachin pesel lo yimot. They choose a very wise smith to make a statue which will not collapse. But don't they know? This is an idea that how can you possibly want to make an image of the god in such a way that it won't collapse? Don't you know that if it were really the god, it wouldn't collapse? Halot teidu pasuk kaf aleph. Halot teidu. Halot tishmau. Halo hu god merosh lachem. Hasn't it been told to you? Haven't you heard? Halo havinotem mosdot haaretz. Don't you understand the way the world is founded? Who is it who controls the world? Hayoshev al chug haaretz. He sits on the dome of the world, In other words, God is transcendent, above the world. V'yoshveha kachagavim, and all those who dwell in the world are like grasshoppers. Hanotecha dok shamayim, v'yimtachem ka'ohel lashavet. He stretches out the skies like something thin, and stretches them out like a tent to dwell in it. Hanoten roznim la'ayin, shofte eretz katohu asa. He makes rulers into nothingness, the judges of the earth, in other words, the governor, the controllers of the earth. Judge can shofet can also mean one who rules over others. The rulers of the earth, he makes them into nothingness. Af bal nitau, af bal zorau, af bal shoresh ba'aretz gizam, v'gam nashaf bahem vayivashu u'se'arak kashti sa'em. They are not even well planted. They are not even seated in the ground. There's no their trunk is not have roots in the earth. As soon as God blows at them, they will dry up, and the wind will carry them away, like the chaff, like the straw that flies in the wind. This idea of the nations of the world being ephemeral, we saw, or all of human beings being ephemeral, as we saw before, here is applied specifically to God's control over nations. God controls the nation; it is He who is in ultimate control, and the nations of the world are ephemeral, temporary. This is all an attack on the idea that the return to Eretz Israel was motivated by Cyrus. Yes, it was technically motivated by Cyrus. It was physically motivated by Cyrus. But who is it who controls Cyrus? God plays Cyrus. God is the controller of Cyrus. God is the author of these events. And Psukim Kafhei, Kavav, conclude this idea. Ve'el mi tidamyuni ve'eshveh. To whom can you compare me and I shall be equal to him, Yomar Kadosh, the Holy One says. Look up in the sky and see who created the stars. I call them out in an orderly numbering, their hosts. In other words, God as commander of the army of the stars. God names the stars. Merov onim ve'amitz koach, because of God's power, enormous power and strength. Ish lo ne'edar. Not one of the stars is absent when God calls them out to stand in line. The idea that God is sort of here portrayed as the commander of an army of stars, when they all stand on parade, they stand in line, and God controls them. But the idea is even more than that, that God controls not only earthly events, but also heavenly events. Do not think that events in the world are controlled by astrology or by the fates. Recognize that events in the world are controlled by God. And so this chapter begins with the idea of Nachamu, comfort yourselves. It goes on with the express idea that the return to Eretz Israel is a divine process, because it is a divine process that is lasting. And it ends with 15 psukim of dedicated to the idea that God is transcendent, God is supreme, God is above the powers of the world, above humans, above the stars. He is in control of the world. He dictates the fates of the world. And therefore, if there is a return to Eretz Israel, it is He who has decided it. This is a key idea in Sefer Yeshayahu, and one to which we ought to devote attention. We also ought to recognize that this is the Haftarah for the week immediately after Tisha B'Av, when we mark the Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the temple, and recognize that God is the author of the destruction. We also recognize that God can be the author of return and of consolation.